This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Prop Points. Jeff Erickson, Nick Whalen from RotoWire here with you today. And we have a lot to talk about. A lot of baseball today, a lot of NBA. We're going to be talking a little bit about props for OKC versus Minnesota in the Western Conference Finals. AJ Schultz is going to join us to talk previewing the NHL Conference Finals. And we got a lot of bets on baseball to talk about. Nick, we're going to start off with the New York Mets. Lost again last night to the Red Sox. And Juan Soto is in the news and clearly stung by the booing from producer Michael Cohen on Friday there. He's gone on to go on a big slump. He's 4-for-29 his last eight games. New York radio disc jockeys are saying it's going to be a terrible contract. We're starting, the broadcaster saying they got to shape up his game, wasn't running out a couple of plays, one on Sunday night, one yesterday against the Red Sox. The sky is falling, Nick.
Yeah, the sky is falling for the 29-19 New York Mets, who are still doing
exactly
just fine, even with Juan Soto getting off to a sluggish start. But you always have to use the caveat, Jeff, by Juan Soto standards, right? Like, this has not been a total top-down disaster, right? It's not like he's hitting 193, still hitting 246. The OBP, it's not where it's been these last couple of years, but it's at 376. He has only two multi-hit games in his last 15, but look, we've seen Juan Soto go through stretches like this in the past, whether it's been in Washington, San Diego, with the Yankees, and now, the start with the Mets. History strongly suggests that Juan Soto will snap out of this at some point. But, I think the media reaction to all this is really the more interesting piece to me, because this is a guy, who spent his career in big markets. Washington, San Diego, those aren't New York, but obviously played last season. Yeah. For the Yankees. And look, when you perform there, maybe you're not going to face the kind of vitriol that he has so far. But I mean, we're 2 months into the season, and it feels like the Mets fan base is just like bracing for the worst every single night. I mean, they're talking like this team is 10 games under 500. It's shocking.
There's big market media, and then there's New York media. There's nothing similar. And maybe Philly would be the closest thing possible to that. Maybe Boston, where you're in a fishbowl. But no, the strain of negativity that comes through with New York media when things are going badly. And hey, the strain of boosterism when things are going well. I mean, both are true. If you're flying in New York, look at last year with the Mets and the run they went on last year. Look at Aaron Judge and, all the tidal wave that carries him. All these things are it just, everything is a magnifier there. Sometimes we talk about social media changes our discourse. No, it's a magnifier of what our discourse is. The New York media is a microcosm of that. I think that's interesting. Last year, Francisco Lindor, I was wringing my hands about drafting him over Gunnar Henderson last year. And yes, Henderson did outproduce him, but it became really close. Lindor was not the problem. For 2 months, though, he was hitting 200. And then in San Francisco, of all places, his bat came alive. And he didn't get shut down the rest of the last 4 months of the season. So constant reminder, baseball is a long play game. We talk, and the thing is, the nature of our show, where we're looking at slates, we're looking at individual plays all the time. It is prop points after all. I think we kind of get lost in that sometimes. I don't think you and I do. We're above that, Nick. We're better than that. But I think there's a tendency. One tends to get lost in that and forgets that it's a long season.
Yeah, me getting swept up in a narrative, never. That could never, ever happen on the show, Jeff. And look, when we don't have NHL, when we don't have NBA to recap, we get a little more latitude in this first segment. I was lost last night with no NBA, first time in a while, where I'm just sitting there. I ended up watching like a cabin renovation show at 8 p.m. I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. Thank God we have the NBA back tonight. But gives us a little more latitude to talk some fantasy, Jeff, which is our bread and butter over at RotoWire. And yeah, I know you participated in a very unique exercise last night, an in-season draft, kind of a redraft, essentially. Knowing what we know now, you get the player stats going forward. Keeping this with Juan Soto, even with these struggles, even with all the negative sentiment, where did he go in that draft?
Yeah, and it's a fun draft. It's a Daily Moves draft. We've been doing it. It's the Yahoo Friends and Family draft, a thing we do every year. Juan Soto still won the first round. My colleague, my podcast, Tuesday podcast, colleague Fred Zinke took him at 1.10. I think Fred was making a point. He was steering into, hey, I might get some bargains with, using early season values because I believe in the player. And you can see that some of his other picks. And I was the opposite. I was Mr. Recency bias. So here I am. I'm such a hypocrite. I'm preaching it's a long play game, and I'm taking Pete Crow Armstrong in the second round. So what, you know, what do I know? But it's fun. I mean, it's fun to kind of do a draft like that. It's kind of a shuffle up of values. You kind of say, okay, what has changed? Yeah, has this player fundamentally changed? I don't think Soto's fundamentally changed. I don't think Lindor's fundamentally changed. As you mentioned, the Mets are 29-19. Remember where they were at last year at this point in time in the season. They're talking about maybe being sellers at the trade deadline. This was like the last year of them retooling, because remember, they did sell off in 2023 a little bit there. Mm-hmm. So it was year one without Scherzer, without Verlander. And look where we are now. They haven't had Sean Manaea throw a single pitch this year. They haven't had Frankie Montas throw a single pitch this year. And they're 29-19. Things are fine. They'll be okay.
They're still favored to win the division. Juan Soto is still 30-1, by the way, to win the NL MVP. Those give him the eighth shortest odds. Shohei Ohtani still leading the way at +115. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Ohtani, Jeff, I want to talk a little Dodgers, because the unthinkable has happened. The LA Dodgers dropped their fourth straight game last night to the Arizona Diamondbacks, got swept over the weekend by the Angels of all teams. Now, Ohtani's been fine. 5 homers in his last 6 games. He's up to 17 on the year, but the injuries to this Dodgers pitching staff, Jeff, which came in on paper as one of the deepest in baseball, talent all over the place, and yet they are as injured as anybody right now. Do you feel like there is more pressure on Shohei Ohtani to come back as a pitcher than there's been at any point this year?
You know, I think he would be pressing, if anything. I think the Dodgers are somewhat impervious to this. They're old hands, first of all, that have been through this battle before. They were doing the long play. They did this last year. They've done it the year before. I mean, they've had such a long streak of making the playoffs. And while we talk about all the Dodgers pitching was, let's remember they too are 29-19. They're winning the NL West right now, a very tough division at that. And they're in first place still in their division, even with this 4-game losing streak. It helps that their offense is just an utter machine, 277 runs scored. You know, that goes a long way towards writing a lot of woes, if you will, as far as they go. But, you know, Ohtani, the latest update was Saturday. He was throwing an up and down bullpen session, which is not, you know, it wasn't against hitters. He's not throwing breaking stuff yet. They're not rushing this because of all the attrition. And you look at the Dodgers depth chart page at RotoWire. You'll see a lot of strike through lines and red marks, the IL. Blake Snell on the 60-day IL. Tyler Glasnow on the 15-day IL. Roki Sasaki shut down from throwing right now and on the IL. The bullpen, I think, is the real story here. This is where they've really been hurting. Kirby Yates just went on the IL, and he struggled lately, gave up a homer the other day. Michael Kopech hasn't thrown a pitch yet for the Dodgers. Evan Phillips is back on the IL. Blake Treinen is on the 60-day IL. They thought they were going to get big stuff out of him this year, and he didn't make it through May. I'm not even sure if he made it to May. Bruzdar Graterol is not going to throw this year. There's a lot of key names. For most other teams, losing one of those guys would be a killer. They've lost a ton of these guys, and they've gotten worse efforts from like Alex Bessia lately and Anthony Banda. You know, they're hurting. But you know what? The one thing that's easy to add, it's relief pitching at the trade deadline. They're going to add a couple of relievers. They're way over the salary, luxury tax thresholds, aprons, if you will, in the NBA. They're just going to keep blowing through that there because they have the budget, they have the money, they have the wherewithal, and they have the desire. So they're going to be fine. They may not be a dominant team, but you'll see. I mean, you look at any sort of odds, and they're always still very pro Dodgers. They're just not a prohibitive favorite anymore. I think that's the difference.
Well, you're certainly right about the NL West odds. Despite these struggles and despite the injuries, Dodgers still -370 to win that division. I will ask you to close the book on this topic, Jeff. Would you consider fading the Dodgers in the NL West? And of course, if you're going to do that, you got to pick somebody else to win the division. So do you like the Padres at +750, D-backs 9-1, Giants 11-1? Any of those juicy enough to you?
If I were going to, it'd probably be the D-backs, just because I think their hitting is sustainable. I mean, the Padres and the D-backs, though, are showing their own warts. The Diamondbacks bullpen is just a disaster right now. They're getting Justin Martinez back soon. That'll help. They're down a couple starting pitchers in their own right. Padres are super, super thin. They have one key injury. We know how it affects them, and they're struggling to score right now themselves. So I still think the Dodgers are justifiably the favorite in the division. But out of principle, you should probably, I mean, if you're looking for those sort of, I mean, that, that those are pretty good odds for teams that are that close in the standings. So anyways, are you still using your buddy's gut instinct as your betting strategy? Come on, you deserve better. RotoWire has the real tools the pros use: rankings, projections, updates, and data that doesn't sleep. Whether you're making picks, setting your fantasy lineup, or placing bets, our award-winning insights give you the edge you need. Get started today by heading over to rotowire.com and entering ROTO15 at checkout for 15% off any RotoWire product. Nick, we had two very hot teams matching up against each other last night. The Cardinals beat the Tigers 11-4. Sonny Gray rolled against that. There was a rain delay in this one here. He came out after, and the runs started pouring in late. We got our over eight runs, thanks to Cater Montero sticking around a little too long, and the Cardinals bullpen giving it up a little bit too. But Cardinals, I mean, we dumped on this team in the offseason for their lack of off activity. They're sitting at 27-21 plus 45 run differential now.
Yeah, they've been hot for what, 3 weeks now, and you know, I don't even know if I could objectively evaluate the St. Louis Cardinals, Jeff, given my affiliation to the Brewers. And look, Milwaukee's still hanging around, Cincinnati's still hanging around in that division. You know, for a while there, it felt like the Cubs were going to pull away, but I mean, the lead's down to one now for Chicago in that division. Cubs, of course, lost last night to the Marlins. Reds are just 3.5 back, so still plenty to be settled in the NL Central. Cubs are the prohibitive favorite. If you look at DraftKings minus 190, you can get that red hot Cardinals team right now 4-1 to win the Central at DraftKings. Reds still hanging around at 10-1. Don't hate that, but does feel to me, Jeff, that this is still the Cubs division to lose.
Yeah, 4-1 is a pretty good price, and the Cubs don't have a closer right now. I don't know. That's a reasonable price. All right, we're going to talk a little hoops coming up next. Talk with some Western Conference Finals breakdown here on Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back to Prop Points. The Western Conference Finals get underway tonight. OKC hosting Minnesota. Minnesota coming off a pretty big rest advantage. Line started off at 7.5, now down to 7 at DK. Nick, we're just going to dive into this really deep, and I'm going to let you shine on this one here. I'll throw a few questions here and there, but set the table for us, please.
Well, first of all, this number briefly opened at 8, was sitting at 7.5 for most of the last couple of days, and now we are down to 7 over at DraftKings in favor of the Oklahoma City Thunder. And you know, pretty much everybody that I've talked to, you know, there's been a lot of pro Timberwolves sentiment. You know, if you take a look at the picks page over at VSiN, you'll see few experts have already jumped on the Timberwolves to cover that number at 7.5. I know our guy Zach Cohen even got it at 8, so props to him on that. He also has the Timberwolves money line tonight, which I think is an interesting play. Look, I like OKC to win this game. I like OKC to win the series, but we do need to recognize that this is another quick turnaround for the Thunder, who of course played a game 7 on Sunday. Minnesota has essentially been off for a full week. Now there is the rest versus rust debate. You know, is it being off for a week in the middle of the playoffs? Is that too much? You know, does that allow you to, you know, kind of rest to the point where you could be a little bit off in that first game? You know, you remember Minnesota came out, dominated game 1 against the Lakers, and then came out extremely flat in that game 1 against Golden State in round 2. So I do worry a little bit about that long break for Minnesota, but overall it has to be an advantage, I think, for an OKC team that's basically played every other day for the last 3 or 4 weeks. And you know, the number one thing that I look at in this series, Jeff, is Minnesota's turnover issues, which were there in round 2 against Golden State, and the Thunder's ability, in theory at least, to capitalize on that. And the Thunder not having to worry about Nikola Jokic on every single possession for 42, 43 minutes per game. You know, I thought Mark Daigneault had to dig pretty deep into his bag of tricks defensively. And look, Anthony Edwards, Julius Randle, Rudy Gobert, these guys present you some issues. It's a completely different task going up against someone like Nikola Jokic. So I think there are some advantages defensively here for OKC, the best team in the NBA at forcing turnovers. Like we said yesterday, Minnesota turned it over 20 plus times each of the last 3 games in that Golden State series. A couple good notes that I came across as far as this game 1 tonight goes, Jeff. So home favorites, which would be OKC, coming off of a game 7, are 10-12 straight up. They are 6-15-1 against the spread in game one of their next series. That goes back to 2003. In the conference finals specifically, home favorites coming off of a game seven, 2-6 straight up, 1-7 against the spread. So I'm not going as far as to take Minnesota on the money line, but if we're looking at this at 7, 7.5, I would lean Wolves.
You know, it's so funny. This set of playoffs has turned a lot of historical trends on their ear. I remember the stat you brought up before game one of OKC Denver about teams that have swept versus teams that have gone game seven, and it was like 14-1 or something like that. So Denver promptly won, of course. We saw all four teams that were better rested in round two lose game one. Is that real? Is that happenstance? I think it's just happenstance, to be honest. I don't really think that it's like teams got hurt by the rest. In fact, you would think, you know, you get more prep time in addition to the player rest. You know, you can scheme up a little bit better too. Mm-hmm. Whereas the team that went seven doesn't have that time to, okay, we're going to attack this person then and there. You know, here are the plays we're going to draw up. They have less, they can do it, but they have a far less time to do so.
Yeah, I tend to think that this is somewhat of an aberration, but I'll be interested to see if it continues, you know, over these next couple of years, because I think in the past we used to see a bigger gap between the number one and maybe number two or three seeds and then the rest of the conference. Whereas I think we have as much parity around the NBA now, you know, especially if you're looking at the top six seeds, we'll say, in each conference than we've had in a really long time. So just in general, you have more competitive second round series. You certainly have more competitive conference finals series than you did, you know, back in the super team era, where it felt like there was usually, you know, one or maybe two teams in each conference that were head and shoulders above the rest. I mean, look at the teams that we have remaining here. That's not the case.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I love that. There are only one top two seed team of the four possible that made it there. Like seeing that. Let's talk total. 217.5. Mm-hmm. Has there been much movement? And do you have an opinion on it?
Yeah, I lean under. I lean under at 217.5. You know, it's somewhat of a cop-out answer to say that it's going to come down to three-point shooting, but it will. And it's specifically, I think, in this series, and specifically for Minnesota, it's going to come down to role players knocking down threes, because I think Oklahoma City is going to be very aggressive in forcing the ball out of Anthony Edwards' hands. If you look at matchups, not only earlier this season, but over the last few seasons, OKC has had a lot of success in limiting Anthony Edwards, not allowing him to get loose for those 30 plus point games. You know, he still played well offensively, but the defensive personnel that OKC could throw at him, whether it's Lou Dort or Jalen Williams, if you want to go with a little more size, obviously Caruso, Cason Wallace, I mean, they have four really high quality options that you could throw at the best player for the Timberwolves. And again, I do worry a little bit about the up and down shooting for Minnesota throughout these playoffs. And meanwhile, OKC shooting just 32% as a team from three for the postseason. Both of these teams lean heavily on their defense, OKC especially. And, you know, you look at the pace numbers and it's like, yeah, OKC is playing at the second fastest pace in the playoffs, but I think a big part of that has been their opponents, particularly those four games against Memphis in round one, a team that really, really pushes the pace. And I think that number is a bit skewed. OKC totally comfortable playing this game at a slower pace if they have to. So, you know, given the questions about the rest versus rust, given the fact that both of these teams have been pretty shaky shooting the ball, I will lean on the under 217.5.
All right. Very good. So many more things that we need to talk about. You talked about this on our show, our SiriusXM Fantasy show, the RotoWire show this morning. Total number of games in this series. I know we had Brandon Kravitz on, and he actually thinks Minnesota's going to win. You were maybe making the case the other way around that it might just go five in favor of OKC.
Yeah, I'm going back and forth on whether I think this is five or six. I think I leaned six games over five. You know, again, OKC has demonstrated enough vulnerability throughout these playoffs, specifically in the second round against Denver, that Minnesota, you know, could take at least one game, if not two. And I think getting one of those first two in OKC is going to be really, really important for Minnesota. You know, if you do think this is an OKC heavy series, you can get the under 5.5 games at plus money, plus 115. I don't mind that, but OKC to win this series in six games specifically at plus 475, that's where I'm looking right now.
All right. Before we start talking about your player rankings and individual props for tonight, I want to quickly share a quick note here from VSiN Pro. Smarter bets start here and last all year with VSiN Pro. Right now, you sign up on an annual subscription and get 14 months for just $1.99 when you use promo code PRO. That's two extra months for free for less than 50 cents a day. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get instant access to a daily email with all the best bets from the hosts and their guests, including Nick's picks here. real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, 24/7 video access on the VSiN Watch app, plus full access to VSiN.com's analytics, betting trends, and expert breakdowns. Don't wait. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe and use promo code PRO to lock in this offer. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. All right, let's talk player rankings here. You did a really thorough set of rankings, most important players in this series, maybe some of the props you like in them here. Mm-hmm. Doesn't get any better than the two stars for each team, starting off with the SGA. What do you like about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander?
Yeah, well, we'll run through this in order. So, you know, SGA and Anthony Edwards, to me, they have to be one and two. They just do, right? They are very clearly mm-hmm. the number one options for each of these teams. And I think it's interesting that both teams, you know, when you start to look at the secondary options, there's not an overly obvious, like, all right, we could depend on this guy every single night, right? It's like, can Julius Randle keep playing at the level that he has? Can Jalen Williams start to play more consistently? But the two constants in this series are SGA, who I have at number one, went over his points prop, by the way, in the final three games of that Denver series. He's as steady as it gets. You know what you're expecting from SGA on any given night. Even if the efficiency isn't there, the numbers will always be there. Everything essentially runs through him. And you can mostly say the same about Anthony Edwards. And I was looking into some of the on-off numbers for Edwards so far in these playoffs, Jeff. The Wolves' offensive rating with Edwards on the court, 116.6. That is very good. Offensive rating with Edwards off the court, 100.6. A 16 points per 100 swing when Anthony Edwards is off the court. So that'll be a big narrative, I think, to monitor throughout this series. You know, when they're sneaking Edwards some breaks, yeah, I think he's going to play 40 plus minutes as long as these games are close. Can the Timberwolves not win those minutes, but survive those minutes? Can you not get blown off the court when Edwards isn't out there? I'm staying away from SGA props tonight, but I do like one for Anthony Edwards, the over 11.5 assists plus boards, -115. You know, we were pounding his rebounding props for much of these playoffs. But again, I think they're going to force the ball out of his hands in this series. So I like tethering in the assists and the rebounds. My third and fourth ranked players in terms of importance in this series, Jeff, Julius Randle and Jalen Williams. We mentioned them already, right? I think it's obvious. Yeah. Both of those guys need to come through. Whichever of those two plays better in this series might ultimately determine who wins it. I don't think it's an exaggeration. Number five on my list is Chet Holmgren. I thought he was quietly really good in the Denver series. I know the numbers weren't crazy, but he was great on the glass. Thought he fought hard defensively. This will be a much, much easier series for him, not having to deal with Jokic. Can he shoot the three-pointer at a more effective rate? That's the big question for him. 22% from three in that Denver series. We're taking the over 14.5 points tonight for Chet Holmgren in game one, -106 over at FanDuel.
Obviously, a lot more hoops talk coming up for the rest of the week. But we're going to switch the topic, go on ice with AJ Schultz from RotoWire and the Progressive Guest Line here on Prop Points.
You're watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Prop Points rolls along here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson hanging out with you on this Tuesday. We had no basketball last night. We had no hockey last night. Both back in action as we move on to the conference finals tonight. We got our assistant NHL editor over at RotoWire, AJ Scholes, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. AJ, let's jump right into it, man. We got game one tonight between the Florida Panthers and the Carolina Hurricanes. Carolina at home, -125 on the money line. If you like Florida, you can get them at +105. I know you're looking at a money line play tonight. You're looking at the total as well, which is sitting at 5.5. So tell us about your plays.
Yeah, so for me, you know, I look at parlaying these two options together in a single game here because it's going to be one or the other. Either it's going to go over and it's going to be the Panthers that win, or it's going to go under and be the Hurricanes. I personally am looking at the Hurricanes. They've been getting phenomenal goaltending. This is one of the deepest rosters in the league. They, you know, they've got a third line that's solid. They've got a fourth line that would probably play further up if it were on any other team. And they've been getting just unworldly goaltending from Frederik Andersen right now. He hasn't given up more than three goals in his last five games, just looking phenomenal. So for me, I think he continues to play to this level. So I'm backing the under, even though it's sitting at 5.5. And with that, I think if it goes under, it almost certainly will be the Hurricanes getting the win. So pair that up with the money line and kind of double those two up together.
AJ, while we're talking about the Eastern Conference Final, I want to briefly segue into the Maple Leafs. They just got eliminated. They can't beat Florida teams in the playoffs, apparently. That must be their kryptonite. What do they do? Do you suggest they tear it down? What, or they try to build on top of this core? Where are they at now?
Well, actually, I think the real problem is they can't beat Brad Marchand in Game 7.
Yeah.
He's 5-0 against the Maple Leafs in his career. So I think that's the bigger problem for them. You know, they're a little top heavy when you look at their cap hits and their roster construction. Now they should be able to get John Tavares back at less than the like $11 million that he's been making. He's on the back half of his career at this point. So if you can get him in for less, but they need to bring in somebody who knows how to play in the postseason, or a couple of guys that know how to do that, because these guys disappear. Matthews, Marner, Nylander, all of them seem to just disappear when we get to the playoffs. So I don't think you completely tear it down, but maybe the best choice is to let a guy like Mitch Marner walk and let him test free agency. You're going to have to pay him reportedly upwards of like $13.5 million is what he's looking for. I think that's too much money. They're better off getting a handful of more experienced guys and building the roster around Matthews and Willie Nylander.
Talk with AJ Scholes, our NHL assistant editor at RotoWire, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. AJ, unlike in the NBA, where we have the Oklahoma City Thunder as heavy favorites to win their series, heavy favorites to win the NBA Finals, the market is throwing up its hands when you look at this Final Four in the NHL. I mean, Panthers are +230 favorites to win the Stanley Cup. Carolina is the long shot right now at +320. If we look at Panthers Hurricanes specifically, how many games do you think this series lasts? So I'll tell you right now, 7 games is 2-1, 6 games also 2-1, 5 games +270, and a 4-game sweep either way, 6-1.
For me, I think I was looking at this as potentially a 5-game series, and not because I think the Panthers can't make these games competitive. I just think Carolina's playing so well. They'll pick up their first two at home. I think they steal one in Florida, and then they come home for game 5 and are able to close it out. That's kind of how I see this series playing out. Now, again, a 5-game victory seems like a one-sided matchup, but don't be surprised if there's an overtime win in there, if there's a couple one goal wins. I think it'll be a tight set of 5 games. I just think Carolina is built so well. They're playing really well at home, and they've been hard to score on. We saw, the Washington Capitals in 5 games put 5 goals in on the Hurricanes. You're not going to win scoring a goal a night.
Meanwhile, in the Western Conference, odds makers have decided that they've done a collective shrug emoji for the series odds in Edmonton versus Dallas. What a weird story for Edmonton. They were 10 minutes away from going down 3-0 to the Kings. Had that weird challenge play by the Kings that spurred a rally for them. They roared back. They're down the goalie that they were thought was more reliable in Picard, and it's now been it's Stuart Principal Skinner back in between the pipes. He was fighting the puck, and all of a sudden he has back-to-back shutouts. What's going on with this Oilers team?
I have no idea. I mean, you look at the way the team is built on paper, they should be winning in absolute just blowouts. They should just be edging things out in blowout games. And we kind of saw that in game 1 and game 2 against the Vegas Golden Knights. You've got 4-2 win, 5-4 overtime win. Like, that's how we expect these Oilers teams to win games and be constructed. So the fact that they completely blanked the Golden Knights in 2 straight games with Stuart Skinner between the pipes is definitely a surprise to me. You know, this for Dallas, they've been equally kind of on the ropes here. They went all 7 games against the Avalanche, and a couple real bad performances in there. They lost game 6 to the Avs, 7-4, They lost game four in that series, 4-0. So, you know, they certainly were on the ropes at periods of this series as well. So I totally understand why odds makers aren't sure what to make of this, because which Dallas team is going to show up night to night? And, you know, are we still going to get this Stuart Skinner, or are we going to get the guy that got benched because he was playing so poorly?
Folks, are you betting on sports? My guess would be, if you're watching the show, you probably are. So why not try the races? First Bet lets you wager on hundreds of horse races every day from top tracks across the United States and around the world. You can sign up at firstbet.com. Firstbet.com. That's the number one, STBet.com. If you do that and you use the promo code VEASAN200, you'll get a 20% rebate on your first 60 days, up to $200. Go check out that offer right now. Again, code VEASAN200, VSIN200. Do that at firstbet.com. Talk with AJ Scholes on the Progressive Guest Line, one of our hockey experts over at RotoWire. So you did a good job, AJ, kind of laying out the general vibe of this Dallas-Edmonton series. It's going to be unpredictable. It's minus 110 on the series line both ways for a reason. Where do you lean in game one specifically tomorrow night?
Well, I think you have to lean towards Dallas. I mean, yes, Edmonton is coming off two phenomenal games with solid goaltending, but this Stars team has had solid goaltending all year long in Jake Oettinger. They looked really good against Winnipeg. They have their struggles, but they've gotten the boost by getting Miro Heiskanen back. So defensively, they're looking really good. Their power play is going to get a boost by having him. Mikko Rantanen actually was very quiet in the last three games against the Jets. I think he had just 1 point in those three games. So if he can start rolling again, with, you know, a couple days off here to get, you know, back in a groove, I think this Dallas team is just really hard to beat, and they can win both ways. They've shown that. If this game becomes a shootout, they have the star power to hang with McDavid and hang with Draisaitl. So I think the fact that they're more flexible in terms of being able to win, and they're at home tonight, or tomorrow rather, I think I take Dallas in game one.
See what you did there, star power. Well done. Speaking of one of the Dallas Stars, Jason Robertson, you know, he's only had one playoff point, you know, missed a lot of time early in the playoffs there, missed the entirety of the Colorado series, has just one assist so far in the playoffs, but he had 80 points in the season. Can we get good value on some of his player props, maybe?
I absolutely think so. And here's the nice part is they kind of shuffled their lines up. You know, no guarantee that this will be what it sticks with tomorrow, but they moved Robinson up to the second line earlier today to play with Matt Duchene. So I think that gives him, you know, not that he's getting bad centering from a guy like Sam Steele, but it's just a higher caliber. Going to get more minutes playing on the second line, even though they'll probably split it up pretty evenly. 255 goal scorer. I definitely like that one. You know, if you look, even the shot props, you have to give up a little too much juice probably on just two. It's minus 165. Not sure I'd feel totally comfortable going all the way to three. But maybe, you know, point assist, I think those should both at least get consideration. I mean, just to get a point, so it doesn't have to be a goal, plus 200, 2-1 with an increased role. I do like that. Good call on that, Jeff.
Thank you.
All right, there we have it. AJ Scholes, everybody. Great stuff, as always. You can check out his fantastic work for us over at rotowire.com. You can catch him on the RotoWire Hockey Podcast as well. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter at AJScholes24. Switching over to Major League Baseball, when we come back, we got a full night slate coming our way. Jeff Erickson's best bets, a little Spencer Strider talk coming up on the other side. You're watching Prop Points.
Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN. Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson, hanging out with you for another 15 minutes. As always, make it rain coming up next. No Adam Schein today, however. Keith Irizarry stepping in for Adam. He's going to have Zach Cohen joining the show in the next hour to give his best bets for both game ones in the NBA conference finals coming up these next two nights. So make sure you stick around for that. Jeff, we haven't talked a whole lot of baseball. At least I haven't gotten your picks yet for tonight's slate. Every team in action. We got a game resuming that was delayed yesterday, but want to start with a big return on the pitching side of things. Spencer Strider set to make his second start of the season for the Atlanta Braves. They are at Washington tonight. Strider, of course, last pitched back on April 16th, been out with that hamstring injury. And look, Jeff, at the time, it looked like the sky was falling for the Atlanta Braves. They get off to this terrible start. You lose Spencer Strider for a month, but here come the Braves back over 500 with one start out of Strider. We haven't even seen Ronald Acuna yet. He's allegedly going to make his debut this coming weekend. What do you expect to see tonight out of Spencer Strider?
So it's interesting. Strider didn't make any minor league rehab assignments. He's pitched in a couple of simulated games. In his last sim game on Wednesday, his velocity was down a couple miles an hour. They said he's just building up arm strength because he didn't throw a ton early on in that IL trip. It was interesting. Threw just 65 pitches also. I find this a really interesting timing, the way they're bringing it back. I mean, Strider knows himself. The Braves, I mean, they're smart. It's a smart organization. So I don't interpret this as a criticism, but it is interesting timing. The Braves are a heavy favorite in this game, and yet some of the bets are interesting. Like over 5.5 strikeouts for Strider is a pretty low number because they're presuming he's not going to go deep in the game. It's plus money, though, at plus 110. There's no outs recorded over under on DraftKings last time I checked either. So the books are kind of wary of this. They're a little worried that he's not going to go deep in the game. Yeah, he just threw 65 pitches, though. I think the Braves are trying to kind of capitalize while they're on a little bit of a run. They did well against the Nats the last time they faced them. I think they want to continue that. Nats are 16th in WOBA versus righties, a 20.8 K percentage. So they're not a huge strikeout game a team either. And yet, I think this is almost a principle bet. I think I want to bet the over Strider strikeouts just out of principle with such a low number while getting plus money. So my bet here is plus 110 on the Strider over 5.5 Ks. Kind of staying away from the money line. I just think that's a minus 185. Yeah. Payout's not really great enough for the risk that's incorporated in this one here.
All right, let's talk some Tigers Cardinals, Jeff. We got Detroit as a heavy favorite on the money line. Tarik Skubal on the mound tonight for the Tigers. Minus 192 is your price there. St. Louis plus 160. Low total at 7.5. Eric Fetty out there going up against Skubal. And look, Jeff, I think sometimes it could be obvious, right, when you see a Cy Young favorite on the mound, but I know you did some digging on the St. Louis Cardinals offensive numbers, and maybe not an ideal spot tonight for Skubal.
Yeah, and the thing is that Skubal is obviously, the Tigers obviously have a huge advantage in the pitching matchup, but I think St. Fetty is a little bit better than, I think, public perception. Maybe maybe not. Maybe it's a little bit of a mirage. He's on this like 14 plus inning scoreless streak, back-to-back scoreless outings, including one against the Phillies last time out. Detroit is really good against righties, but maybe cooling off a little bit. Fifth in WOBA against righties overall, but they've scored 11 runs over the last four games, including four last night against the Cardinals. A lot of those were late, though. Sonny Gray totally shut them down. Skubal is just ridiculous, though. 71 to 6 K to walk over 54 innings, 11 strikeouts in three of the last four. But St. Louis sneakily is really good against left-handers, and Skubal is a lefty, obviously. Over the last 30 days, 332 WOBA, 112 WRC plus, 18.5% K percentage. I think that's one of the things that I'm looking at there. I wanted to kind of look at maybe an under Skubal K prop. And 7.5 is low compared to what he's done lately, but it's, again, minus 190 price. I really don't want to bet that. If you want to find like some alt lines there. And the problem is it's hard to find an alt line and then bet the under. You can do that to try to find some over. So, I'm though out of principle, though. St. Louis is just as hot as Detroit right now. They're playing great ball. They had a 10-game winning streak at one point in time, and they haven't really cooled off so much since then either. You're getting plus 160 at home against a Detroit team that's really good, best record in baseball. I get it. It's got Skubal, but plus 160 at home, I think that's a principal bet. I'm going to take St. Louis in the money line, plus 160.
I like the bet. I hope it doesn't hit because of how I feel about the St. Louis Cardinals, Jeff, but yes. A lot of logic there, a lot of logic at a great price, that plus 160. All right, let's move on to your team. Cincinnati at the red hot, just tearing the cover off the ball, Pittsburgh Pirates. Cincy minus 148 on the money line, total coming in at 8. Nick Martinez going up against Bailey Falter. I know you got three plays in this game, Jeff, so go off.
Yes. hey, let's talk about the streak. First of all, betting, you know, I'm not going a dissertation about betting with or against streaks, but I just want to say this. The Pirates have a whopping 24 game streak of less runs scored. April 22nd against the Angels, when they won 9-3, was the last time they scored more than four. So watching that broadcast, I was listening to the, you know, it was the Pirates and broadcasters too on DirecTV. And they sound like they're hostages in the broadcast booth right now. It's very happy. It's like, well, maybe we can, maybe this guy, we'll call him back up again and maybe we'll get some more offense. Let's see what he can do. Tommy Pham. Oh, there goes Tommy Pham again. Oh, great. So it's tough times in Pittsburgh right now. Clearly firing the manager did nothing against this here. Reds aren't super good against lefties. Bailey Falter is a lefty. 291 WOBA against lefties, but they do walk nearly 11% of the time against lefties. And Bailey Falter walked five against the Mets last time, has a 9.5% walk percentage, which is the complete opposite of Nick Martinez, who's found his stride. He hasn't walked of anyone in the last three outings. So got a lot of things in play here. I like the Pirates under 3.5 runs team total there, -125. That's not that high of a price for a team with such an epic streak. Falter over 2.5 walks. I like the alt line at +190. You have the minus odds at over 1.5 is the actual line. If you want to be the safe route there, you just don't get the good payoff there. That's why I went with the alt line there. But if you want to go with the regular line, it's 1.5 at, I think, -160, if I recall correctly. And then finally, just keep going on the Reds on the money line there because the pitching matchups in their favor and at -148, you're not really paying a super steep price.
All right, let's move on to the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers. Talked a little bit about the LA Dodgers' recent struggles at the top of the show. They got to get right tonight. Got Ryan Nelson. That's Ryan, not Ryan. Ryan Nelson going for the Diamondbacks against Yoshi Yamamoto. I know you're looking at the total here, Jeff.
I am. The Dodgers, I mean, we spent some time in the first segment talking about them. They've got Yamamoto, first of all, is great. And going with an over in a Yamamoto game is always dangerous. So, you know, but keep in mind, Arizona got to Yamamoto last time. Five earned runs, two homers allowed last time out. That was two starts ago in Arizona. So he may not just utterly dominate. Gave up another homer last start also. So wouldn't be surprised if the Diamondbacks, who have an excellent offense, get at least three or four runs. And meanwhile, I love Ryan Nelson. I don't love Ryan Nelson, but I think he's an improvement over Eduardo Rodriguez, who's on the IL right now. Just not this start. But the X factor here is the bullpens. Arizona's bullpen has had a lot of struggles. The Dodgers, Kirby Yates, Evan Phillips, Michael Kopech, and Henriquez, Blake Treinen, all in the IL. The one good thing going for them is that Landon Knack and Matt Sauer took one for the team yesterday, you know, eating up all those relief innings, meaning that Tanner Scott, Alex Vesia, Anthony Banda, and Luis Garcia, who have all pitched over 20 games so far, all got a day of rest. But still, that bullpen's hurting too. I'm going to go with the over total, 9.5 at -105.
All right, Jeff, real quickly, what do you like in Padres Blue Jays? I know you got something on the San Diego side.
I want to pick on Chris Bassett. Last 30 days, 5.14 ERA, 1.43 WHIP. So we'll take the team total over 4.5 at +110. Also, Yankees Rangers keep rolling with Will Warren in his strikeout streak, over 5.5 Ks at plus money.
All right, we got a couple more bets coming for you. Our G-Bank Best Bets of the Night are brought to you by G-Bank. You can get the G-Bank Visa Signature Card right now. Most credit cards treat sportsbook and gaming transactions as cash advances. That's even when you put your own money on the card, but GBank treats gaming transactions as purchases, so you're saving 3-5% on cash advance fees and gaming transactions right there. Plus, with GBank, you're earning 1% cash back rewards on all eligible sportsbook and gaming transactions, and you're getting 2% cash back rewards on all eligible purchases. You can apply now at vsin.com/GBank. That's vsin.com/GBank. All right, Jeff. A lot to choose from tonight. Your best bet of the night is?
I win it at length. We'll go with the Pirates under team total 3.5. I know you got some basketball best bets. Let's hear them.
Yeah, well, I already told you I like Anthony Edwards over 11.5 assists plus boards. I like Chet Holmgren points tonight. The one I wasn't able to get to earlier, Jaden McDaniels over 5.5 rebounds. Don't love the price here, -132, but OKC remains vulnerable on the glass. They were out-rebounded in the Denver series. They're giving up the most rebounds per game to opponents. Jaden McDaniels, a big difference maker for the Wolves, the biggest on-off differential for this team in terms of their regular contributors. Jaden McDaniels over 5.5 boards tonight. That's going to wrap it for today's edition of Prop Points. We'll be back at you tomorrow. Make it rain coming up next on VSiN.